And back, hour number two, and we're talking to Dr. Bob Wood and the amazing Bill Tompkins. And do click on the book selected by extraterrestrials and get a copy. You can click on it and go right to Amazon and get it tonight. This is a knockout, the first of four or five books, maybe more, that Bill is going to make available to us. He's telling things he's not supposed to say, but he hadn't been told not to yet. So maybe this is part of the disclosure effort that some say is, well, we all say is long overdue, but is underway now. And I would suggest that by virtue of the fact that what we're hearing is not being bothered, and that may be true. Bob, what are your thoughts about this so far? You were the editor of this first book.
Well, when I first met him, his story was so amazing that I almost didn't believe it. But as I became better acquainted and realized that he knew the same people that I knew, I got gradually convinced that there's no question but what he believes everything he's saying tonight and in the books. That's absolutely what he remembers.
Well, you can hear him thinking and drawing on his memory banks. I mean, that's one of the most pleasurable things a host can hear. Guest not repeating pre-recorded messages or learned texts and contentions and tracts and all of that. These are real experiences that he's telling us about. They're remarkable. Douglas Aircraft and Douglas Missiles in Space was heavily involved in this, Bob, this whole thing, I guess.
Well, actually, some of that was a surprise to me because I had no idea that...
And you were top secret there.
Well, later I was. Yeah, that's right. But when I was working at the same time that Bill was there, I was just kind of a young engineer doing the aerodynamics and thermodynamics sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
I didn't really know him personally, although we were in the same group. He was working on ground support electronics, and I was a thermodynamicist, so we didn't talk to each other much.
Very interesting. All right. Okay, let's go back. Go ahead, Bill. Bob, anything else to say?
No, I think that's a good background.
Yeah, good. Excellent. I want to get as much as we can this hour with Bill, and then we'll obviously have you guys on again if you'd like. There's so many things to talk about. I've been given a list by Frank Chile that is stunning. We've talked about underground tubes and tunnels, and suffice it to say that they are all over the place in this country, and they link not only just to city destinations and military bases, but they link to enormous, naturally occurring, or maybe not, underground caverns, the openings in the earth down there, and they're being used to put buildings and all kinds of things. I suggest that some of them that you've heard we have accidentally entered, we shouldn't have gone in there because they were preoccupied by others that aren't supposed to be here as far as we're concerned. Of course, they've probably been here long before we. They're being used to hangar and otherwise store spacecraft, interstellar spacecraft, intergalactic spacecraft, inter-solar system spacecraft, amazing things. Now, there is something here called Solar Warden. Tell us about the Solar Wardens, Bill, please.
Okay. I have to, this gets boring, but
if it's too boring, don't. I mean, but go ahead if we need it. It's fine.
I'm being facetious.
I get it.
We got to go back to this think tank inside of Douglas, and I just want to make one point.
Sure.
Douglas himself, he was the fellow who started the think tank inside of Douglas, and it was supported by the Secretary of the Navy, several Air Force generals, and it had been studying extraterrestrials for quite a long time. Now, one of the things that came up when we got into different requirements for different programs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, ask your question again, because I want to refer it from in a different way.
All right.
So the
term is Solar Warden, like a warden in a prison. What is that about?
Okay. So, back in that think tank, One of the other fellows comes in and he said, "Bill, I want you to put together some type of space vehicles that can operate in the galaxy." And that was about it. And so from that, I then got another thing from another PhD. And he said he wanted me to come up with what types of missions the Navy would be doing if they had to combat people out in the galaxy. So that's another part. So these two things, then, I did quite extensive studies on both of them, actually for several months. But I came up with a half a dozen different kilometer and 2 kilometer long space vehicles and everything.
Now, hold on, please. People are going to say, wait a minute, Bill, how would you be able to build a 1 or 2 kilometer spacecraft down here, fly it up into orbit, and then park it there, service it, stock it, and have it take off and go on patrols around the solar system? Was it designed to be built on the ground, or was it designed to be constructed in orbit?
Well, this is a little bit of a long story, but I will answer your question. So I did both of those studies. I came up with several types of missions that would have to be performed. And I designed quite a number of different capital ships, like spacecraft carriers, some of them a kilometer long, some of them 4 kilometers long. But I also designed a 17-kilometer long transport, a transport to take people off the planet. And the book to get the answers to that part. Now, back to your question of Solar Warden.
Wait a minute. I got it. Please. This is absolutely beyond intriguing. This 17-kilometer long craft designed to take people off the planet. Do you have any knowledge that it was ever built, or was it strictly in the design stage?
I do not know whether that one was built, but 4 kilometers were.
They were. And, okay, so we built 4-kilometer-long spacecraft here on the ground and somehow got them into orbit, correct?
Yes, and that manufacturing facility is located in Utah.
All right. They probably would have been built in modules, I would think. That's an awfully big piece of equipment.
I need to jump in here with a quick remark.
Go ahead, Bob.
Wood. Yeah. On page 68 and 67 are the original sketches in Bill's own handwriting, one of them of a 2-kilometer-long spaceship.
Wow.
So I think the thing that really impressed me is that we're looking at the sketch that was done by Bill Tompkins himself.
Absolutely. Now he says the four kilometer long craft was built. Okay. Did you ever get to see it in its completed stage, Bill, or were you told?
No, I didn't. But let me just. I got to go just a little further.
Sure. Go ahead.
Now, I had worked for Northrop after I worked for Douglas, and I worked for Northrop before I worked for Douglas, but. When Douglas was taken over, Northrop then took the information that was done in the think tank, and they went to Virginia, and they sat down with the people there, and they Navy people, and then they came back and borrowed a bunch of money, and they bought the U.S. Navy construction facilities for battleships and for aircraft carriers and actually for submarines. But it was the aircraft carrier ones that they wanted. So they learned how to build a massive kilometer-long spacecraft carrier, which is what you see when you see the pictures of Solar Warden. Northrop learned how to build them, and they then built these facilities along with people from some of the other aerospace companies, too. But it wasn't until recently that a disclosure came out about extraterrestrial U.S. Navy spacecraft carriers and battle groups. And so the point here, back again in the Douglas facility, those vehicles were from studies that were made there in the 54, 55, 56 time period.
Okay.
And it took till the 80s to get them really built. And they are operating out in the galaxy. Now, some of them have facilities for maintenance and support on Mars and on Jupiter's moon.
Okay.
But many of their stations, their support stations, are out in the galaxy.
I mean, you're talking about in the Milky Way. They're not in our solar system. They're elsewhere.
No, they're in our solar system.
Okay.
They're operating in our solar system.
But it's a galactic format, even though they're still here in the solar system. I understand. Gotcha. Now, let me ask you a question. People are going to want to know this, and I don't know if it's in the book or not, but the idea of building a kilometer-long or two-kilometer-long craft, pretty hard to hide from people, you'd think, but things are hidden all the time from people, and they never see them. What was the, when you drew this up, what was the method of propulsion that you drew up and integrated into your plans that would propel this craft into orbit and then in an interplanetary mode? What was the method of propulsion?
Very simple, anti-gravitational.
Okay. And where did we get that? We back-engineered it?
Yes.
All right. And these anti-gravity propulsion units, when they're in space and there really is no gravity to contend with, do they still propel the craft, or is there another means of propulsion?
Well, of course, there are several means, and some of the newer ones that are being built now are an entirely different propulsion.
But I can see the anti-gravity being needed to get them off the ground and up into orbit. That's clear. But beyond that,
yes,
you got something else.
And answering your question, how do you do it without people knowing and seeing it, all of it's done underground. Just like the facilities up around Mount Shasta.
Okay.
And the facilities that are down in New Mexico.
All right. These are enormous caverns. Yeah, I got it. Okay. All right. And you weren't allowed to take your Kodak camera down there with you, obviously.
I wasn't. Maybe some people were.
All right. I wish you had been able to get a ride in the tunnels. That would have been a real kick. But the early ones that we built had trains in them, high-speed normal rail traffic, which is interesting. So
some of the tunnels are like freeways with trucks.
Wow, that big. Now, the ET tunnels would have had maglev or something beyond that technology. And then there are still, I've been told, much older tunnels that are still down there, that are still just fine and may or may not be being used by us, them, or we'll be right back. Okay, and we're back talking to Bob Wood and Bill Tompkins. Now, what we want to talk about, I think this is maybe the most interesting in the absolutely fascinating life of Bill Tompkins, is you mentioned there is some kind of a, let me preface this by saying I spend a lot of time on the air here talking about weather modification, geoengineering, chemtrails, and other things. They're not only doing things underground, they're doing things over our heads all the time. Now, you've got a weird cloud formation off the Southern California coast where you live?
Absolutely. Now, I'd like to premise this by saying that we are supposedly in a El Nino type of weather condition.
Yeah, El Nino, right.
And so clouds do come in that. However, for the past, say, 6 weeks, California weather is beautiful here. Everybody should check that out. But we have had clouds, which California doesn't get. And I know the clouds when we have El Nino. I know the shapes. I've seen this for years. These clouds, I want to describe one. And the easiest way to do this is to stretch your arm out right now. Open your hand so your thumb is one way and your little finger's the other way.
Got it.
So that's about 8 inches, okay? Now, do that about 7 times right across the horizon.
Okay.
Now, a group of clouds started to form out over the ocean. And they were fairly similar. But the wind had been blowing, and so they moved quite fast. This group of clouds made a 180, and it almost turned opposite to the direction that it was going over, like it sort of turned and then went out towards the ocean. And when it turned and came back, it was now a diamond, upside-down diamond shape. And the height of this was 30% of the sky.
Okay.
So from the bottom of this diamond that's turned upside, delta shape rather, it's upside down. There's a V come down, the V goes up, and then there's a top of it that's horizontal.
Correct.
All the way down the left V are sort of ports, like holes.
Really? Then this looks like holes. This is a white cloud in a form of a delta, a V. Is it white?
The cloud is white, but okay. Around the center of each one of these little sort of black ports.
Yeah,
ports. And they come all the way down from the left to the bottom, and they come all the way down from the right to the bottom.
Okay, on the sides,
and the thing is massive. This is massive, okay? And,
Is it moving, Bill? Is the cloud moving, or is it stationary at this point?
It moves at 1/2 mile per, It's hardly moving.
All right.
It was there for 7 hours, okay? And it was there in the morning around 8 o'clock, and middle of the afternoon, clouds changed, and it finally left. But the point is, that thing stood there out over the ocean, and it must have been at least 20,000 feet high across the top. Now, the top had a different thing to the top of it. It had sort of almost rectangular spots, which were quite large, with circles around them. And the circles were maybe only 12 or 14 all the way across the top.
So, that's very weird. Did you get any pictures of this?
Let me finish.
Yeah.
I had the camera.
Yeah.
Okay. Then there were lines. Very fine lines all the way across this, like lines went all the way across it. There must have been 20 lines.
Would this look like what? Like stretched wire lines, like dark lines?
Dark lines. No, okay. White lines.
White lines. White lines. All right. Okay.
And there's white all around both the two verticals going up on the left and the right side.
Uh-huh.
And then there's these curved sort of rectangle things, about 8 of them are quite large across the top.
Oh, it's very weird.
I've never seen, I've never seen this in my life.
Mm-mm.
Never.
Mm-mm.
And for that to be there and finally dissipate is just unbelievable. And my camera didn't work. I didn't have film. And I tried to get a hold of one of the people, the neighbors, and they were gone. And I couldn't get a camera. But I'm just saying that's one type. Now, there's another group of clouds that are different than the clouds we see.
Mm-hmm.
And this had long vertical lines hanging down from the clouds. Long stretching from, say, a 45-degree angle up of the top of the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
These hang almost down to the surface of the ocean.
Now, these wouldn't be rain stringers or anything like that. Uh-huh.
No, yeah, and when you see a cloud with rain coming out of it, you know what that is.
Sure.
This is big, separated lines of white little lines.
Very weird.
Coming down.
Very weird.
And this was in a perfect rectangle. It was a perfect rectangle. Clouds on top, then out of the clouds are all these lines that come down. And that was, that particular week, we had our fronts come in from southwest going east. And both of these two situations were the same week. And it's, to me, where I've never seen this before, is amazing.
Well, that is very strange. Storm fronts coming in from the southwest, not too usual. That's part of the El Nino phenomenon, I believe, coming up from the subtropics. Very interesting.
And then when you go to right in the chemtrails in the computer, and everybody should do that, I think, because there's a lot of trails up there.
Oh, yeah.
And in this area, we get them solid for like 3 weeks at a time, then it'll be maybe a week and a week and a half, and they don't drop it. And then back they are again, the same thing.
They spray and, spraying viciously. I know. I've seen them many times.
Now, I'm asking you, Jeff, why do you do that to me?
What did I do?
Yeah, well, you were flying those planes or whatever they were, and you're dropping this stuff on me.
Oh, if I why am I do it? Why would I do that to you if I were doing it?
There are
apparently multiple programs underway. The most common explanation is that barium, aluminum, and I've forgotten the third, strontium. Some people say, but I don't know that that's true. Are put in the jet fuel and then spewed out of the engines. And the idea is that they're turning the lower altitudes, 30,000 feet and lower, into a plasma so they can bounce electrical energy off of it and use it with the HARP program and other similar programs, which aim tremendous energy up to the ionosphere, which comes back down and activates this so-called plasma field that's been created by hundreds and hundreds of aircraft, and they're able to use it for defensive purposes. Some people say anti-missile, this and that. Some people say mind control. Some people say climate control. It could be all of the above. I don't know. I don't have the exact answer, of course, because I'm not privy to any of that. But it is a program that's ongoing, has been going on since the mid-90s, but I don't have an answer for you.
Okay, well, you're telling me that the old HARP program is still going, okay?
I'm telling you that what I hear is the one up there has been given to a university, the one in Alaska, but that they have portable and mobile facilities that they can set up almost anywhere. There's supposedly one on an island off of Baja California, which is helping to steer the weather. I don't have answers. I can just tell you what I've heard.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on the HARP program interfering with weather?
Well, the HARP actually will almost do anything because that's, of course, another program that many fellows have worked on for a long time.
Yeah.
And, it isn't for just communications, but essentially it can be handled to play around with your head.
Yeah.
Be handled to to drop a missile on you.
Yep.
It can
That's what I was saying a few minutes ago. Similar things. Yes, I agree. I concur.
The whole box full of stuff.
Yeah.
And amazing.
I agree. Okay, let me ask you one other question while we still have a few minutes, Bill, and I'd love to have you back again. Maybe we can get through a program like we did the first time, flawlessly. We have to use a landline phone next time. That's okay. It's not your fault. It happens to all of us. The solar system in which we live, hold the music, Todd. I'm going to burn up a few minutes here. The solar system is inhabited by off-planet intelligences and our own intelligences, yes or no? And who's out there and what planets are inhabited? Complicated question. Yeah. Well,
yes,
just briefly. All right. What's on? Let me just do this. What's on Mars right now? Who's on Mars?
We have facilities on Mars.
Yes.
And other people do too.
Okay.
And just like underground in New Mexico, there's large facilities on Mars. Most of the facilities are underground.
Are the glass glass tubes, so-called, that we've seen in some of the Mars photographs, are those actually part of the underground system, tunnels, if you will? They're awfully big, like 100 meters across, but they look like tubes.
A good way to answer that is when we were working on the tunnels for the Air Force contract, my secretary came in, and you'd have to see her to really understand this, because she's really flirts all the time. She had the Air Force general reviewing our program.
I'll bet he was.
And his staff was there. And so she asked the general, how did he get his big B-52s in those tunnels from Washington back out to the air base in California? And that broke up the meeting. Because tunnels couldn't get the wings into those tunnels.
Of course not. Yeah.
But tunnels on the moon are, from what most of the reports have shown, are less than on our planet, but there's a lot of caverns on Mars.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
and
okay.
And they have tunnels, too.
Are any of the original inhabitants of Mars still there? Do you have any knowledge of that?
Only that some of them that came here left relatives there. And there's a great deal of communications with some of them.
Yeah. Does that mean to say that we are Martians, or does that mean to say that Martians blended in here without being noticed?
Well, depending on who me is, actually, if you will accept that some of us are from another star's planet system on the other side of the galaxy.
Okay.
So I would have to say, when you've got several stars out there that have different groups of people, Mars is a situation very similar to Earth being looked at and being worked on by different species, different civilization species.
Right. So we're there. We've been up there for decades doing this and doing that. When you look at the pictures of the Curiosity rover, the pictures that seem to show things, Do you chuckle because it is showing things, and do you? I guess you kind of got to laugh at some of the cover up efforts that the NASA photography team goes through before they release these images.
Well, that's true, and especially on the moon, because we've got really good photography of everything on the moon.
Uh-huh.
And when we got there with Apollo, it was a problem because around the rim of the crater,
yes,
were parked these 6-kilometer-long spacecraft carriers, and they were not on the ground. They were floating above, and they had many of the personnel out of the vehicles, standing on the dirt, the moon
watching.
Dirt,
watching,
giving us the finger, and
so to speak.
I think that we never found out, or I'm sure they have now, but at the time, we never found out who it was that told us to go ahead and finish taking our pictures, pick up the rocks, 3 or 4 more of your missions,
and that's
don't
it.
Come back.
Don't come back.
We got the finger over the phone.
That's funny. Bill, would you do me 2 things? One, you and Bob, but especially Bill Tompkins, you have a Merry Christmas, Bill. And will you please come back and we'll do some more of this?
Yes, we'd love to.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill Tompkins, very much. That was fascinating. We're going to edit this program up and tighten it up so it'll be a perfect listen. And lots of new things to think about, for sure. Thank you, Bill. Merry Christmas again.
And Merry Christmas to you and everybody that worked on it there.
Thank you, sir.
And I got to wish Bob and his family a Merry Christmas, too. Okay.
Merry Christmas. Okay. All right, Bob Wood, thank you, sir, for being here. Thank you for editing this book, and you've got a lot of wonderful things ahead of you with the books to come.
Thank you.
All right, Merry Christmas, Bob.
Merry Christmas.
And I don't know who's on there, Frank or George. Who's there?
I'm here.
Okay. Merry Christmas,
here.
Frank. Thank you. Okay, and George, you're listening, I'm sure. Merry Christmas to you. All right, we got to get into the news so we can get out of the news and come back with hour number 3, which we will do in just a few minutes. Thanks for your patience, and we will continue.